these new acquisition rules. Give us an indication of what this really means for the acquisition professionals within DOD, what they can expect.
Sure. The guidance itself that Dr. Carter, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, had put out, it's very timely. It came out last Tuesday, and it's really about 17 pages worth of very tightly knitted guidance to the program managers down running each of the major programs. But to your readers, I think it probably means about six big things. And let me give them to you in order of priority, I think. For the large programs that are front end of development that have risk, this is going to mean that the unit cost affordability is going to be, for the first time ever, as important as the very technical capability of that program. In other words, when I'm managing a major weapons program, I have technical capability. It's usually significantly more important than schedule, and schedule is usually significantly more important than cost. This, for the first time, will actually make the actual expected production cost, in terms of what my ability to afford that unit when we eventually get into production, as important as the capability that I'm attempting to develop. That's going to manifest itself in probably three different programs. The first one we're going to see is the Army Ground Combat Vehicle, and as we speak, the Army is already restructuring that program to field it faster and field it at about half the cost per unit that they were previously expecting. There are two Navy programs. One is going to be the next Ohio class replacement. We lovingly refer to that in technical jumbo as the SSBN-X.
Nice.
Okay, they're going to be about $6 billion a copy. So the savings that can be afforded there is going to be critical to the taxpayer. The third one, very controversial, definitely going to get White House attention again, is going to be the next rebirth of the presidential helicopter. And we refer to that as the VXX program. And I forgot one last one for the Air Force. This is important to the Chief of Staff, of course, General Schwartz, and that's going to be the Air Force Next Generation Bomber, which we refer to as the Long Range Strike. So of the six, that clearly to me is probably the most important. Okay. The second one, if you are managing a major program, Dr. Carter is obviously going to be going through and conducting what he calls portfolio capability reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the possibility of significant scrutiny is going to increase here this fall. Okay. And he will be looking specifically for programs that are either redundant or unaffordable. And two in particular I think he's going to target. I think he's going to target the Air Force, what's called the MPRTIP, Multi-Platform Radar Technology Insertion Program. That's obviously an Air Force program. Northrop Grumman is supporting that. And I think he's going to look at that as being redundant or possibly a little too expensive. And I think he's going to go back and look at the Army and possibly integrated air missile defense. And specifically, it's a Lockheed program I think he's going to target called Medium Extended Air Defense, MEADS. Okay? The third thing that I think the readers are going to want to know about is that he is institutionalizing what's called a should-cost review. And what a should-cost review means for the listeners is basically that when DOD sends its budget over to the White House and to Congress each year, it does not use the budget estimates that are put together by the program management of the program because it sees those as potentially biased and historically underrepresenting the actual costs. So what it generally does is it uses independent cost estimates, or what are called ICEs, that are put together by a separate independent arm of the Pentagon called CAPE, Cost Analysis Program Execution. And what Dr. Carter is basically saying is, hey, when we've got programs, for example, like the F-35 low-rate initial production, where Lockheed's saying, hey, I can actually come in underneath these unit costs and deliver faster and cheaper than the OSD cost estimates, then put your money where your mouth is and prove it. Actually deliver those aircraft and bring them in under cost. And when you can do that, Dr. Carter, I believe, is supporting the approach that the service would then take the extra savings
mm-hmm.
that's left over in the budget for that particular year and let that customer buy more quantities of that particular program, I'm sorry, that particular platform in the program. In other words, if Congress budgets for 43 aircraft in 2011 in F-35 and Lockheed Zebel, or most importantly the program office, is able to bring that program in underneath that and generate savings, then the Air Force and the Navy should actually get the 46 or the 48 or however many aircraft actually they're able to buy for the amount of money that Congress actually gave them.
We are talking with defense analyst Jim McAleese. And so what this makes me think, and I'm sure our audience is wondering this too, is about the effectiveness of these guidelines. And it sounds like in some very specific ways, you anticipate there being some real In some very specific ways, you're going to see some effectiveness here. But it's very specific.
Yes, but I would also suggest, you know, there you're also going to see increased risk. It's not simply that, you know, we're going to change the way we're conducting ourselves by tomorrow morning. The biggest change that I think that Dr. Carter has imposed is abandoning the old type of contracts that we used that were basically cost plus award fee. So in other words, the government was always on the hook for 100% of the cost, and the contractor was only ever at risk for its fee. And so this award fee, this very subjective, touchy-feely fee, was always at the discretion of the program office, and it was generally always tied to the technical performance of the weapon system, and it was never tied to schedule or cost.
Okay.
The biggest change that I think that Dr. Carter is implementing is a shift to a fixed price incentive fee contract. And so he's basically saying, you and I will negotiate a target cost let's assume it's an aircraft, just for the sake of argument. You and I will negotiate a target cost for that aircraft, and then you will pay me a premium fee for delivering that aircraft. Now, for each dollar that I can come in underneath that cost, and therefore actually save a dollar for the American taxpayer, I will then get to send a bill to the Department of Defense for an extra 50 cents of that $1 worth of savings. That is very significant because historically we used what was called the 70-30 rule. So that if a contractor saved 30 cents or saved a dollar with the cost, saved a dollar with the cost to the government, then he or she could submit a bill for 30 cents. This is important because the contractor can now pick up 50% extra profit for every dollar that he or she saves. However, the reverse is true. So for every dollar's worth of cost overrun, this is particularly important, that the contractor will now share equally with the cost in the government in terms of every dollar's worth of cost overrun. That, I think, is going to be the big thing that's going to get the contractors' attention and really begin to improve the cost estimates that contractors submit, in terms of those cost estimates being credible when they're presented to the president, presented to Congress, and particularly improving program execution.
Jim McAleese is a defense analyst and principal at McAleese and Associates. Thanks so much for enlightening us on this rather complicated issue. I feel like I could talk to you about this all hour long. I do appreciate you joining us.
Amy, happy to do it, and I apologize for the technical mumbo-jumbo this morning.
Yeah, but it's necessary, so we don't mind it at all. Thanks so much.
Thank you.